Welcome. You are listening to the Blue Hardwood Podcast presented by Dallas Sports Nation, enhancing your experience. I am your host, Brian Zillum. If you would like to follow me on Twitter, I am available on Twitter, my first and last name, Brian Zillum. If you would like to follow the podcast is available at Blue Hardwood. My iPhone users, at your earliest convenience, if you'd like to provide me a rate and review, that would be awesome. The Dallas Mavericks ended their losing streak, finally. The Mavericks beat the Wizards last night, 119-100. Despite the score, the game was a little bit closer than expected. It took until about the fourth. The Mavericks finally put away the Wizards. And joining me on the podcast today to talk Washington Wizards, I have editor of Bullets Forever, Alan Jenkins, joining the show today. Alan, how's it going, sir?
Hey, good morning, Brian. I'm doing well on my second cup of coffee. I can't complain.
Yeah, I'm heading that way myself, my brother. Appreciate you joining the show today. And Alan, just to kind of look at this game first before we dive into any other fun conversations. So going into the game, we have the battle of 2-7 teams, both teams obviously struggling. You know, Washington was sitting on one win until about Sunday, until they beat the Knicks, which is funny because Dallas got drilled by the Knicks on Friday. So Dallas is going to the game, you know, six game losing streak. Washington's, you know, trying to muster some type of camaraderie, some type of win streak going, because, you know, there's a lot of scuttlebutt, obviously, that there's a lot of noise in the room that players may not like each other. There's, you know, different players saying different things about effort, all that fun stuff. You know, going into the quarter, it seemed pretty, I don't know if Washington was like asleep, didn't care initially. You know, obviously Dallas starts the game on a 7-0 run. Otto Porter's, you know, doing his best to try to keep him afloat, so to speak, in the first quarter. But then it's just, you know, I don't want to say very lazy, but I always have complaints and concerns about Dallas's transition defense, but Washington's was pretty bad last night. Just overall.
No, you can say it was lazy. You can say it.
Because I would say for me, if I was a fan or someone who covers this team, the only thing I could say that could give them a pass, if they were young and hadn't had zero time together, but a lot of these guys have been playing the game a long time, playing together at least on this team for a while, exception of, you know, Dwight. That just seems, I don't know, is that just the players just being like, hey, I don't give a crap, or do you think that's bad coaching, or just a combination of everything?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of everything. It's, for one thing, there's organizational issues from the top down. There's issues with the coaching, and then now it's pretty apparent that these guys don't enjoy playing with each other. And because of that, you're not going to bring the energy on the defensive end. You know, if you're playing for a teammate, if you're a team that, you know, where the whole is greater than the sum of your team, you know, that all has to start on the defensive end, and even offensively, you just make the extra pass, things like that. But the Wizards aren't doing that right now. They haven't done that this season. And these slow starts, these poor transition defensive, I mean, they jog back on defense. That's become the norm this season.
Wow, that's unfortunate if that's the case. You know, the first quarter, you know, at least they were only down as much as 11. But then the second quarter happens and, you know, Wes Matthews decided just to go supernova like he always tends to do. I had saw something from the Mavs Moneyball site. I didn't even realize this. I think Wes Matthews has made his last 27 out of his last 46 threes versus Washington for some. I was just like, how can you just hit this many threes versus one team? But that's an NBA for you. That's a weird, just oddball stat.
Yeah, he it always feels like he crushes the Wizards, and last night was no different.
Yeah, he went on a run where he had 8 straight points, which bumped the Mavericks lead to 16. Not really, still not a pulse yet for Washington. At some point in the first, you know, the lead just started just growing, got as high as about 24. towards the end of the half, you know, Washington tried to at least get within about 18. You know, there's still not a lot of noise from Wall at all. He was super quiet until about, I think, until about maybe 3 minutes left in the second. He finally started going to the rim a little bit. And, of course, the first half ends on that just nasty Luka step back three, which Wizards actually cut the lead down to 18, but then the bumps the lead up to 21. You give up 13 threes and a half, that's usually pretty concerning, and then you're not really going to the line at all. You know, with the first half, especially Washington, seemed like they were in the foul, like the bone. They were putting Dallas in the bonus like within 7 or 8 minutes in the first, and I'm sorry, first and second. I'm sorry, when you're doing that, you're probably going to get your butt kicked.
Yeah, it's you know, I think the fouling is definitely an issue, but yeah, the 3-point shooting, like you alluded to, I believe Dallas was 13 of 23 from the field, which is yep, something like 50, 55, 56%. So if you shoot that in a half, you're it's most likely going to result in a blowout. And the first half, at least, it was a blowout.
What was concerning, just being an observer of the game, Alan, I can't say I've watched too much Wizards ball before this game, maybe like a quarter and a half. The fouls necessarily weren't legit foul, you know, it seemed like they were just kind of lazy, just like reaches for the ball, because it's not like, you know, Dallas was going to the basket some, but not like not to the point where it was like something like LeBron, where obviously, okay, he's going to the basket, he's getting fouled. A lot of it seemed like kind of silly touch fouls. It's just like, was that really necessary?
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of become the norm for this team. Defense has, they're one of the worst defensive teams in the league, and a lot of that touch foul reaching stuff that you talk about is that you just talked about is because they're not committed defensively. They don't bring any energy defensively. They just don't care defensively. So because of that, you get guys who, rather than, you know, fighting through a screen or communicating or whatever it may be, they just stick their arm out and try to, and hope that that's going to stop the player, which, you know, surprise, surprise, it didn't work. And, you know, the Mavs are shooting free throws just minutes into each quarter. So, yeah, what you saw, you know, it's just more of the same. This has kind of been the norm for the Wizards this season. And that's a huge reason why, one of many, why they're off to a 2-8 start.
Yeah, and then the first half stats, just to wrap up some info, you know, Wall was the leading scorer for the Wizards at 11, Matthews had 17, and the Dallas kids, DSJ and Luka, had 13 points. Third quarter was pretty humorous because within milliseconds, it seemed like Morris decided to pick up his fourth foul, and I was under the impression he wanted to foul out just within about 10 minutes of playing last night.
Yeah, he has these kind of games where if he's not engaged, he'll just commit silly fouls or pick up a technical or whatever. Last night, I'm looking at the box score right now. Yeah, I mean, he didn't play well. Yeah, it's just it that was he's kind of a, you know, he'll give you one game every, you know, 8 to 10 where you're just like, wow, who is this guy? And he'll just explode for 20 points, 10 rebounds. But then he'll have nights like last night and where he's nearly invisible. So, you know, he's been frustrating, but yeah, it's, he almost did foul out, 5 fouls. But at that point, you know, the game was already out of hand.
Right. And the third quarter, cause we were exchanging texts and I had said, hey, if Washington was going to make some noise in this game, it had to be, you know, through the perimeter. That's where they could get, you know, that's where they could get some hay, so to speak. And, you know, lo and behold, the third quarter happens and Dallas, you know, comes out the gate. They're a little sloppy. You know, they only had 6 turnovers the first half overall, and then the third, they had 8. And I was just gradually seeing the floor just fall out. I'm just like, oh my God, I've seen this before. This team's already given up a 26-point lead before already to Atlanta team that's not very good. it's happening. Washington roster in theory is better than Atlanta, so I knew I was not going to take this game for granted. So, you know what, Washington came out a little bit in the third, and at least they were taking advantage of the turnovers Dallas was giving them. I believe in the third they were able to cut it as close as 10 after Wall hit some foul shots. Once he got fouled, I believe it was about, I want to say about 48 seconds left in the third. Oubre was making some threes. He had Rivers. Porter was obviously fantastic from the foul line. I believe he was five for six. Abil struggled mightily, I believe, throughout the game. Abil was only 1 for 9 from the 3-point land. So he wasn't as effective as he normally could be. But you know, the Wizards they've got a puncher's chance, and then the fourth quarter starts, and the Wizards are within 7 within the first minute of the fourth after Dwight Powell decided to take some ill-advised three. I don't know why he did that, and it was terrible, which led to a Kelly Oubre dunk. And then after that, Jeff Green decides to hit a three, and the lead's only down to 6. And this was about with a little over than 8 minutes. It was about 8 minutes, give or take. So there's hope. I didn't know if you thought they were going to come all the way back. That's the one thing, getting down 20-something points. You can get really close, but then do you have enough steam to actually overcome the climb? And do you have that extra second wind? And especially when you're trying to bomb from the perimeter and you're not hitting from a high percentage, or you don't have that one guy cooking, that's what makes a comeback like that very difficult.
Yeah, and, you know, last night was kind of a microcosm for a lot of the Wizards games, where they dig themselves an early hole, get down by 20-plus, and then they spend the third and fourth quarters just trying to claw their way back in. And they make you – they give you a little bit of hope. Okay, you know, this lead's cut to 6, 7, 8, whatever it may be. And, you know, you have a glimpse of hope. But then, just like last night, Dallas hits a 3. Dallas gets, I think it was a DeAndre Jordan dunk, and before you know it, that 6-point lead balloons to 11 at the snap of a finger, and all hope is lost at that point. But yeah, I think you're right. It's just once you dig yourself a 20-point plus hole, it's a lot of energy. It's a lot of things have to go right for you to get back in that game, and it's just getting that second win to get you over the hump, which the Wizards didn't have that night or last night, and they haven't had for a lot of the games this season.
Yeah, I did actually have two important things circled on my notes for the fourth quarter, Alan. You know, once again, it was about 6:49 left. The Mavs were in the bonus. And, you know, prior to that, you know, they were still in it. But then you had referenced that Jordan dunk, which actually – that at that time the Wizards were still only down 6, but then, you know, I don't want to say, it seems like a nonchalant rebound by Howard, DSJ gets the steal, oops it to Jordan, and then at that point Mavericks went on a 7-0 run, which kind of sealed the deal a little bit. So despite the final, that's, you know, it was a lot closer than Mavs fans and faithful would have wanted, but they still got that win, 119-100. And it's funny because, you know, these teams, to me, obviously there's some different things going on between the Wizards and the Mavs, but I felt like I was seeing a reflection just in play sometimes with when I would see the Wizards kind of be lazy in transition or sloppy turnovers. Dallas has done that a lot. I mean, they've had a lot of close games as well, but just those games, they have gotten torched some as well, where they're just, you know, super sloppy sometimes. Transition is questionable, where they're just letting these kind of second, third tier guys light them up for the perimeter. So certainly not taking that win for granted. You know, Dallas goes to 3-7 on the year, 2-8 for Washington. Sorry about that, Alan. I wanted to actually just get your kind of thoughts and opinions just as far as the way the teams are, you know, going and built right now. So Dallas is, you know, a little different situation than Washington. You know, they're not really tied to a whole bunch of money on superstars or all-stars, so to speak. What was your initial impression of watching Luka Doncic for the first time?
Well, he doesn't look like a 19-year-old rookie, that's for sure. He looks like a polished guy who's been in the league for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, I was impressed. Last night was the first time that I've watched him entirely from start to finish in a game. And I think he was questionable up until a couple hours before game time with a bummed ankle, but you know, it didn't look like that ankle bothered him at all. I'm looking at the box score right now. Only 2 of 7 from three, but 9 of 16 from the field. So that means he was, let's see here, 7 of 9 from inside the arc, which is a very good sign. You know, he was rebounding the ball. He's definitely a big guy. Assists, and then it just seems like he's one of those guys who comes into the league kind of like a Jason Tatum, like where he just fits in right away, and he looks like he belongs. And I was super impressed.
And just getting your thoughts a little bit on Dennis Smith, you know, thus far this season, there's been a lot of talk, conversation. You know, some people are really hopeful that, you know, the situation with DSJ and Luca Perrin could, like, work out long-term. Do you feel like that combination could work long-term, or do you feel like the Mavericks may need to go to another different directions with that, having two ball handlers in their starting lineup at the same time?
Yeah, you know, I think it's it's one of those situations where you have one guy who's clearly established, and then Dennis Smith Jr., who – he's insanely athletic. He can jump out of the gym. It just seems like all the intangibles haven't come into fruition yet. And that's okay. He's a second year player. I don't think it's time to push the panic button at all. But it's all about player development. It's all about if he can, you know, hone in on those skills that they need him to be. And at the same time, I think the team kind of needs to decide, okay, do they want Doncic to have the ball in his hands most of the time? Do they want Smith? Like, who do they want to be the trigger man? And, you know, it looks like the season, you know, isn't going to end in a playoff appearance. So I think this is going to be a very important 70-plus games for the Mavericks to figure out, okay, can we make it happen with these two guys?
Right. I was very realistic coming into the season. Some people out there had Mavs a sneaky under the radar player team, you know, playoff team, whether it be folks at the TNT level. I know Reggie Miller and Charles Barkley were saying, hey, watch out for Dallas, they could sneak in. And I think they were just so happy and excited to hear the news about Luka than maybe Dallas having another potential franchise piece moving forward. And they saw that, and DeAndre Jordan. For me, as someone who follows and, you know, obviously loves this team, I knew long term with the pieces they have, you know, number one, it was going to take a long time, just because, you know, you can't just glue 5-6 new players together and expect them just to be a playoff team right away. And then especially with their start, that obviously hasn't helped things. So I don't want to say there's no hope for the playoffs, but yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that at 3-7 in the Western Conference, you're probably not making the playoffs.
It's looking like in the West, at least, if you got to get to 47, 48 wins, to have a real shot at the postseason.
Yeah, that's pretty tough. And their next 11 games aren't easy. You've got, you know, a couple games with Utah. You've got a game with Chicago that could be winnable potentially. You know, you've got a lot of good teams like the Celtics, the Warriors. There's no cupcakes. There will never, with this team, as I'm sure you can relate, there are zero cupcakes on the schedule. You have to play the full fourth quarter, you know, four quarters, if you want to even have a chance to win these games, because Dallas is not good enough to, you know, be a team like, let's say, Toronto right now, who's obviously playing great, or, you know, they can't just go in there and say, oh, well, you know, we'll give our a half-assed effort and we'll come back in the third quarter. No, you're not that good overall within your time, you know, offensively, just to shoot your way back into a game. So you have to play the full amount. Yeah, because as far as any their upcoming schedule, like I was saying, so they've got actually a back-to-back tonight. They go to Salt Lake. Even with Donovan Mitchell potentially not playing, that's still going to be a rough game. They've got OKC, Chicago, Utah again, you know, Memphis, Brooklyn. You've got Houston and LA mixed in there. So that's not easy. And then just assuming this team could just put it, you know, get the wheels back on. I'll go ahead and say right now they're probably not making it. And then they just need to focus on the really figuring out if Luka and DSJ are going to work long term, because, well, like we were talking off air, you know, Dallas is going to be a team in the offseason that could make some noise with all this potential cap money they have. So that's why they need to keep their eyes on maybe someone like Kelly Oubre on the Wizards roster, and maybe they could land him in the offseason. But just as far as just Washington overall, man, I'm really I don't want to say they're probably the most – they have to be one of the most confusing teams just overall, top to bottom. You have all these established players, and it's almost like they're acting like high school girls in a way. Because is it just like each one just nipping at each other, or is it just one person that you could say, hey, he's the cause of all this?
So I'm of the mindset that – a team takes on the personality of its leader. Mm-hmm. John Wall is clearly John Wall's team. You know, and I think, which has been great. So Washington actually the past really 5 years of this, really the past 5 years, this has been the second most successful run for this franchise. And that's because the Wizards were underdogs. They surprised Chicago in the playoffs that 1 year. They swept Toronto a couple years later, and you know, and that was because John Wall had an edge to him. John Wall was the underdog, and the team fed off of that. The team fed off of that energy. Now, that's kind of flip, the pendulum swung to the other side, whereas, you know, the Wizards, the only thing they can hang their hat on is a couple of first season playoff wins, or first round playoff wins. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden this team thinks they've arrived. They think they've arrived. They think they're being underrated. You know, you hear these quotes mainly coming in the off season from Wall and Beal, oh, we think we're the best backcourt, we're not getting enough recognition, et cetera, et cetera. And now it's just reached a point where all of this has gone stale, and John Wall is now, he's not playing with that same edge that he was playing with at the beginning and last few years of his career. He's playing like a guy who's arrived, and he's kind of upset that others, mainly from the national media, aren't really giving him that respect and attention. But at the same time, he hasn't done anything to deserve it. So that's why you see this lazy defense. You see, you know, not running back, not making hard cuts, and the rest of the team just feeds off of that. And I think this roster, you know, everything has kind of gone stale. Just, you know, the whole let's just run it back next year with the same Wall, Beal, Porter trio, and we'll plug in a few guys around and we'll just run it back, and then we'll run it back the year after that. And that's kind of gotten stale. And this was a long time coming, and now here we are 10 games into the season. The Wizards are 2-8, but it's not like they're doing a lot of things right. There's a way, way, way more negatives than there are positives. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to see this thing get better or change unless one of Wall, Beal, or Porter is moved.
Wow. Who would have thought a team bringing in Dwight Howard? Dwight Howard would not even be the talking point of any dysfunction.
It's funny. I tweeted something out last night. He is the least of their worries right now. There's probably there's probably a long, there's a laundry list that's probably, I don't know, 10 items long, and he is all the way on the bottom of issues with this team. So he's actually been a pleasant surprise, but granted, he's only played 3 games, but yeah, he's not the problem.
So your solution right now, one of the, either Beal or Wall have to go right now?
So, God, I've toyed with this scenario a lot in my head. Here's what I think at the moment. So Beal, you would get the best assets for in return. However, he's a little bit younger than Wall, and he has a higher upside. Now, Porter is – he is what he is. You know, Wizards Twitter goes crazy because he, you know, a lot of times doesn't assert himself in the games. He lacks aggression, whatever you want to call it. And then others who defend him say, well, the coaching staff does him no favors. I get it. He is what he is. He's not going to be the alpha. He's not going to be the number one on a team. And he's actually a very good number three. It fits his personality. He's not trying to be the guy. He's okay with doing the dirty things. He's okay if you don't run plays for him. He can still get his. You know, you do have to do some things here and there to keep him engaged. And now it just comes down to Wall. Wall, it looks like he's already peaked. This should be the prime of his career. He, the knee injury last year obviously set him back. His best season in the NBA was 2016-2017, and he's averaging a double-double. He was pretty much a lock for 20 and 10 every night. Mm. And that, ever since that season, we just haven't seen the same John Wall. Now he has a supermax that kicks in after this year, where his salary jumped from $18 million to about $38 million per year. So he's going to be making $160 million over the next 4 years. So if I'm the Wizards and I'm running this team and I need to shake things up, which I think they do, as tough as a pill as it is to swallow, and Wall brought this franchise back from irrelevance, I think if you're going to hit the reset button, or at least try to make adjustments on the fly, I think Wall has to be the guy on the trading block.
Now, I'm sure you've already messed with this a few times. What teams have the cap space to absorb John Wall?
So right now, a lot of things, or a lot of hypothetical trade. I don't love the trade machines and all that stuff. Right now, the suitors that I've seen out there are Orlando, Phoenix, and then some type of a trade with Memphis. You know, kind of. Oh. I've seen swapping Wall for Conley, because they're both going to make Conley's about to get a supermax as well. Or maybe it kicked in this year. I'm not 100% sure, but they're about to have similar salaries. So those three teams, I've seen Wall's name brought up.
Huh. Yeah, that's an interesting combo. I never thought Grizzlies would even consider trading Conley. Although, you know, already this year he's making about $30 million a year. So now, right. In exchange, if you were going to flip, you know, your superstar like that, would you just take someone like Conley straight up and just kind of wipe your hands and say, okay, let's get this done? Or would you try to request some type of draft compensation in return?
Well, I think, and that's a good question, because I think the franchise has to decide, are we hitting the reset button, or are we going to try and make adjustments on the fly? A wall for Conley trade, let's just say one for one for argument's sakes. To me, that sounds like, okay, we're just trying to make adjustments on the fly, and we still think we're a playoff team this year. Now, if you trade Wall to whomever for a bunch of picks, that obviously means, okay, we're going in a different direction. This year is a wash, and let's lose as many games as possible just so we can get the best pick to rebuild starting next year.
Yeah, that it's really a tough situation to be in, just because, you know, right now, especially if the Wizards don't make any moves, there's players that they're going to lose just because they are just screwed financially, where they can't, you know, even if they wanted to entertain the idea of keeping Kelly Oubre, they have no money. So he's just going to walk essentially for free.
Yeah. So Kelly Oubre, it's interesting because he's in a position where, so he's a restricted free agent. So if any team were to make him an offer, the Wizards could then match it. But, you know, he's in year four, and he did make the jump from year two to year three. But there is nothing this season that really gets you super excited and makes you think that Oubre has made that leap to be a solid NBA player. You know, he still makes a lot of the same mistakes that he was making his rookie and sophomore years. He isn't a lockdown defender like everybody thought he would be. Everybody was hoping he would come into the league and turn into this 3D guy, you know, Trevor Ariza, Mbamute, you know, et cetera. He hasn't turned into that. He's only shooting about 30% from 3-point range, and that's pretty good for him. The one thing about Oubre is he has a ton of potential. You know, everybody talks about his wingspan, something like a 7-foot wingspan, and he brings energy every night. Doesn't matter if his shots aren't falling, doesn't matter if things aren't going his way. He'll bring the energy on a nightly basis. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a bad thing, because he'll dribble the ball 1-on-3 and try to finish in traffic, which doesn't end very well. The thing is with Oubre, the hunch I get from hearing other people in the media is just that there are going to be teams that are going to be interested in him, and there likely is going to be a team that's going to take a shot on him and probably slightly overpay him. So then the Wizards are in a tough position, whether they think he works for this team long term, or whether, you know, they just let him walk. And that's going to be, you know, now we still have 70 games to go. And, you know, if the Wizards make a move, it's also very likely that Oubre could be involved in that trade. So, you know, still a lot can happen. But if Oubre, it does stay on the team for the rest of the season, this is going to be a very, very interesting summer, not only for him, but how Washington handles his situation.
Yeah, because potentially, if, let's say, the Wizards, you know, parted with Oubre in some type of trade, now his, you know, his restricted rights would transfer over to, you know, said other team, right?
Right.
Interesting. Okay. That, see, to me, that, like, that's just, you know, status of Beal and Wallace, he might be Washington's most intriguing asset to see if they could flip something, just because you're telling me, you know, you've got that advantage where, especially, you know, a team like Dallas, they're going to have a crap ton of money. So that's why if they could somehow get him now, which I don't think is possible unless they finagled some players off the roster that they have now, man, if they had some additional draft conversation, I would love just to be like, hey, we don't have any probably functional players that you could use, but here's a late first and maybe like a future second that we can give you for Oubre. At least, you know, it's not, and it's unfortunate to say that's all you get, but hey, it's better than you can take a late first and maybe an early second to make it a functional part of your team. It's better than nothing, right?
Yeah, and Oubre was drafted in the middle of the first round, so you would, I mean, I guess from that mindset, you would want to get something else aside from a late first rounder. But
right.
But yeah, it's the Wizards have a very big decision, and to be honest, we'll know how the franchise thinks about him, because assuming a move is made, if he's involved in it, clearly that means that they did not want to pay him this summer. And if he's not involved in a move, you know, assuming one does happen, then they've pretty much kind of boxed them in and are willing to match or given him an offer or willing to match whatever any other team offers him this summer.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something on the Dallas roster that we could offer you where we can make the money work, but it's just it's not feasible right now. Not with the Dallas money and then the amount of money Washington has on their books right now. But hey, maybe they could get rid of Yong Mahimi eventually.
That's another one. Mahimi has been a headache ever since he signed that deal, and he officially has fallen out of the rotation. So now Washington is paying a guy $16 million a year to sit on the bench. So it's very likely that this coming summer, they're either going to try and buy him out or stretch him if they can't somehow get rid of him. But yeah, that's another headache. And that's another, not a swing and a miss. I don't even know what you call that signing, but yeah, that's, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I know that's frustrating. Well, Alan, thank you so much again for taking some time this morning. I, you know, really appreciate it. It's actually some time before Dallas and the Wizards actually meet up again in D.C. I believe it's around March 6th. That's when the next matchup is. And will Wes Matthews hit 10 threes a game or 10 threes again? I don't know. Fun stat, I didn't realize – Dallas had actually won the last 15 and 16 matchups. Do you know the last time Washington beat the Mavericks was 2015?
Oh, I was going to say 2009 on opening day with Gilbert Arenas, Caron Butler, and Antoine Jameson. But that's okay.
No, it was. I want to say it was late 2015, and this is when a Wall, I want to say, probably had about 30. I know he had at least a double double where he had probably about 35 and 12 as far as
right.
But yeah, I didn't realize the discrepancy was that bad. I was like, come on, that can't be right. But sure enough, they announced that on the broadcast last night, and I was like, oh damn. But yes, those out there, be sure to follow Alan on Twitter. He's at AJ, or he's just at A. Jenks 24. He does great work for Bullets Forever. Be sure to give them a follow on Twitter. But Alan, thanks again for your time, man, and thank you for allowing us to invade your airspace today. We were recording this early Wednesday morning, so we will try to post this ASAP. But thanks again, y'all. Take care.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.